Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is brought to you by The Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to The Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03 Monday, July 21st. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the WBBM Noon Business Hour. I'm Judson Richards in for Rob Hart today. Southwest Airlines has set the date for start of its new assigned seats policy. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, facing the threat of tariffs, a Lincoln Square toy store stocked up early, making a bold move that could pay off this holiday season. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park Business Line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Scott Friedland, head shopkeeper, Timeless Toys, at Chicago's Lincoln Square neighborhood. Scott, great to talk this afternoon. So tell us what you did to address the potential threat of rising tariffs well in advance.
Hi, thanks for having me. So yeah, we kind of saw the writing on the wall, right? There's a lot of talk about tariffs, not knowing how that was going to go. We decided to buy heavy and buy early. So we hired some extra staff to come in, and we started ordering heavily. We took up all the space in our warehouse, you know, had some things stored in garages and basements of some of the workers, and, you know, used our money wisely to try and get as much in as we could. And, you know, basically we found ourselves with trying to get an entire year's worth of stock in at pre-tariff pricing so that we can continue the business and continue to charge at a reasonable price for our customers.
Scott, how are our tariffs impacting the toy industry at large?
At large, they're quite an impact. You know, we saw a lot of manufacturers actually shut down for quite a bit. They started coming back, and now, you know, there's talks about some of them shutting down again. You know, it's kind of similar to a COVID situation. And, you know, especially with the tariffs in China, 80% of all toys across the world are made in China. So we just don't have a lot of that technology and ability to make it here in the United States. And other than that, a lot of our toys are made in other countries, too, which also have smaller tariffs on them. So it's a huge impact on the industry.
We're joined by Scott Friedland of Timeless Toys. So, Scott, how has Timeless Toys benefited from the advanced strategic planning?
Well, you know, we've benefited in a few ways. One, we were able to get in at lower pricing, so we haven't had to raise our prices like a lot of stores have done. And on top of that, we find that we're always in stock, right? Actually, our online business started booming because of this as well. And a lot of that just happened to be we have so much stock of everything that things that we usually run out of so quickly and reorder and run out of and reorder to try and, you know, manage our cash flow. We have all those things. So people are continuously ordering them. So we're actually seeing quite a boom for business at the beginning of this year.
Scott, what advantages in the current landscape does an independent toy store have over the big box competition?
Our biggest advantage is that, one, we have buyers that are really in tune with the toy industry, right? So we're out there finding the best things for your child and not necessarily just picking up the newest license or what the most popular item might be. Our customer service is outstanding, and we have a staff that's fully trained in either early childhood development, child psychology. Everyone's taken courses or actually has degrees in those areas. So when you come into Timeless Toys or you shop on our website, you can guarantee that we're going to help you find the perfect toy for your kid and not necessarily what the newest thing is. We're going to find something that will help your child develop based on what the questions we're asking you and something that's going to last that child for years.
Scott, great stuff today. Thanks so much. That's Scott Friedland, head shopkeeper, Timeless Toys. You can find them at Chicago's Lincoln Square neighborhood. Right now it is 12. Oh, by the way, I should say, coming up, Southwest Airlines is set to end its longstanding open seating policy early next year. We will get into that.
Money talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, Southwest Airlines has set the date for its seat assignment launch, ending open seating in a major shift for the company. Joining us with the latest, Joe Sweeterman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul University. Joe, great to talk today. Thanks for joining us on WBBM. So we discussed about when this Southwest first announced it would end open seating a year ago, but it had yet to set a date. Now it has. What should we be expecting, Joe?
Well, it's a really interesting thing. You're exactly right. We thought this was going to happen much sooner, and I think they realized this was such a titanic change from that open seating policy that, you know, they better go slow. But what's made it complicated is they're reconfiguring all their airplanes to two class. They're going to have expanded legroom up front, and so they're trying to do that in assigned seating at the same time. But they finally pulled the trigger in January 27th when they assume a load of new schedule. This all kicks in.
Southwest has been really effective at turning planes around. Are there concerns that the changes could slow down the boarding process?
I like many people, am worried about that. People are bringing so much carry-on baggage these days, and you take out, let's say, that 20-30% of carry-ons, or people bring more carry-ons, because they don't want to pay. And that could really jam up those overhead bins, and little things can have a big effect. They've also been really tight with their capacity. They're pulling seats out of the market, trying to, you know, push up those load factors. And that's going to mean some crowded planes, and, a few minutes delay could have really big ripple effects.
Yeah, no doubt. Talking to Joe Sweeterman from DePaul right here in Chicago. Joe, could these changes impact Southwest brand identity? And I think they've got, a pretty good number of customer loyalty. Could that also change or be impacted?
It's really going to be tough because they built that whole brand on the freedom of picking a seat and changing your flight and so forth. And they changed both together. So now you have a situation where you can't just cancel your flight reservation and get your funds back for future travelers. Now expirations on that, which makes things pretty tough. But with that, with the paid bags, a lot of people feel a mild sense of betrayal, which is generating a lot of, customer backlash. But I do think it's allowing them to match those basic economy fares of other airlines and be more aggressive on those super low prices. And that's a big plus.
Are there pluses, right? Could Southwest frequent flyers and top-tier customers benefit from the new boarding system?
I do think so. I mean, now they can sort of more freely offer those bargain basement tickets, knowing they're going to have that ancillary revenue. And before, they sort of did that only with these periodic sales, where they'll come out with a big sale and you'll have 5 days to grab these super low seats. And then the prices will often be higher than United, American, Delta, much less Spirit. And now they're going to be able to offer those, rock bottom fares because they have those extra revenues. But that said, that's a lot of years, over 50 years of the other model. Some of those Southwest loyalists are going to may jump ship.
Joe, what other major shifts are expected in Southwest's business model over the next year?
Well, one thing we're seeing is they have, Wall Street put enormous pressure to change their business model. And this is in a lot of ways a response to that, to be more like the other airlines. But with that, they've cut back capacity. So you look at Midway, and they're operating, more than 5% fewer seats than a year ago, which is somewhat of a shock because, the post-pandemic travel market's been pretty strong. We think they're going to bounce back now that these changes are underway, but it's been a little bit of a downside for Chicago with that shift.
Joe, thanks for all of the insight there. That's Joe Sweeterman, Professor of Public Services, Director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul University right here in Chicago. Coming up next, an expert weighs in on the best car choices for young adults.
You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Well, as young adults embark on exciting new chapters of their lives, heading off to college or starting their first job, buying a car is often a big milestone. Let's get some help from Matt Jones of True Car, located in Los Angeles. Matt, thanks for joining us today. So let's talk about the important considerations for young adults buying a car. Where should we begin?
I think the most important consideration for young adults buying a car is overall cost. The reality is most cars on the market, new, are pretty good. Most 8, 10, 12-year-old cars are pretty good. So it's not like, when you and I were kids, we had to say, hey, this car is more reliable than the other. I think the thing that we really need to focus on is overall cost. And that's what we see people get in trouble with when they're buying their first car. It's not really understanding exactly the totality of what that car is going to do to their pocket.
Matt, you're taking me down memory lane. 1990 Toyota Celica was my first car. I sold it with 205,000 miles. I'm confident if I just kept on driving it today,
You'd still have it now.
I think it would still be running. We'd probably be chasing about 748,000 miles. Is it better to buy new or used, and how used is to use for that first car?
Oh, that's a great question. I think the best way to go is to go used. You minimize your you minimize how much money you can lose if you've made a mistake. You know, the first person who had that car has already eaten the majority of that appreciation. So you're less likely to pay overpay for a used car than you would for a new car. And I think the safe spot is if you can get a used car that's under 80,000 miles. A lot of cars have 60,000-mile powertrain warranties these days. So there's a good chance that the car has been recently serviced. You know, it's been upkept. So we want to try to keep cars that are like 6 years old, 80,000 miles. That seems to be the sweet spot for buying a used car. Now, back when you and I were kids, you know, you'd say you want to buy something that's 3 years old, but those three-year-old cars are like $30,000.
Yeah.
So 6 years, 80,000 miles will get you something in the low 20s, you know, low to mid 20s. It's still got a lot of life in it. So that's kind of the sweet spot right now.
We're joined by Matt Jones of True Car. So, Matt, what safety features should first-time buyers be prioritizing?
Well, the great thing is a lot of these new cars come with the safety features that probably matter most. And I'm not being flippant when I say this. They come with Bluetooth. And they come with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto to keep people's eyes focused on the road. But the good stuff like anti-lock brakes, airbags in the front, airbags on the side, remote sensors, those are almost standard on most cars that have been made in the past 10 years. I think what we really want to focus on for these younger drivers is helping them get a car that's going to keep them focused on what they need to do. And that's away from their phone. So Bluetooth is going to be integral. Some of these Android Auto type deals that allow people to use their phone, which they're going to do, but from the safety of the integrated into the car as opposed to looking into their lap, that's a big one. But here's something else that's really overlooked is adaptive cruise control. Now, this is something that makes sure that you don't go too fast on the highway or too fast on the city streets if you have a long commute. So adaptive cruise control, is an overlooked safety feature that a lot of people should be digging into.
Matt, in less than 60 seconds, can you find something out there that's practical and kind of cool?
Yes. There's a lot of practical and cool cars out there in the $20,000 range and under. What you want to look for is cars that have been sold in mass market. You want to buy the cars that you know the nameplate of. Everybody knows Honda Accord, Toyota Corolla, Jeep Wrangler. Those cars can be had because they're sold in such high numbers. You can find a good version of it. It's cool. That's practical. That's not too expensive. If you just know where to look, places like True Car or online.
Man, I miss that Toyota Celica. Matt, thanks so much for your time. That's Matt Jones of True Car, based out of Los Angeles. Still ahead, top Midwest travel destinations for foodies, plus suggestions from our Monday stock picker. That's
every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Jensen Richards in for Rob Hart today. Stocks are trading higher. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park Business Line, reminding you to bring your business home. Jack Ablin, Chief Investment Officer, Crescent Capital here in Chicago. Jack, great to talk today. Let's begin here. The stocks, they hit record highs to kick off the new week. Do you see the momentum continuing?
Yeah, hi, Johnson. Yeah, I do. I think that what we're starting to see is some really positive earnings results from a number of companies. We had, I think, Verizon this morning, but over the last week or so, we've had probably about nearly 12 or 16 of the top 100 companies report. Virtually all of them beat analyst expectations. And so it's a great start to the earnings season.
Jack, what areas of the market do you find most attractive right now?
Yeah, so unfortunately, a lot of expectations are built into large caps, which makes them pretty expensive. But international stocks, emerging market stocks, and even some small caps offer a better valuation than the mega cap tech names in particular.
On the flip side of that, what's the biggest threat to financial markets?
Probably the threat of lacking Fed independence. As we know that President Trump has openly decried Chairman Powell. I think he would like to get rid of him and bring in a Fed chairman that would lower rates immediately. I think the investment community would not take kindly to a Fed that they felt was not independent, and we could see at least some maybe near-term positives, but longer-term blowbacks as a result.
We're joined by Jack Ablin, Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Capital. So, Jack, what's your advice for investors who got skittish and have been sitting on the sideline throughout this comeback?
Yeah, so it appears that a lot of the investors that were taking President Trump literally decided that, okay, maybe that's a little too extreme. They think that perhaps there's now what we call a Trump put, that the Trump doesn't want to see a bear market on his watch. For those investors who have been watching this rally, there are certainly cheaper parts of the market that haven't participated, like small caps, like international, and that would probably be a best way to try to get in.
Jack, hard to believe, but we are heading into the back end of 2025. Could you give us a preview?
Yeah, so a lot depends on earnings growth and a lot depends on profit margins. And right now, large cap profit margins are still holding up. Small caps are a little bit tenuous. And it still remains to be seen what the actual impact of these tariffs and proposed tariffs will be. We'll find out certainly in the coming months.
All right, Jack, we're going to lean on your expertise here. Is there an area of the market with huge potential that no one's talking about currently?
Huge potential that no one's talking about? I would say probably in the event that the administration wrestles control of the Fed and rates come down a lot, I would say probably the junkiest small caps would do very, very well in such an environment. But even here, Powell has pledged to stay in his role until at least May of next year. So that's still a little bit of an advance, but I think that could be an interesting play, at least from that point forward.
Jack, we're grateful for your time today. Thanks for joining us on WBBM. That's Jack Ablin, Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Capital here in Chicago. Coming up next, some of the leading hotspots in the Midwest if your passion is food.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Well, there are some unexpected foodie destinations right here in the Midwest that are getting national attention. Who would have thought Madison, Wisconsin, or Columbus, Ohio would rank among the nation's top budding culinary hotspots? We welcome Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works, a.k.a. the Restaurant Coach, based right here in Chicago. Izzy, nice to talk again. Let's begin here. Why has Champaign, Illinois become a surprising hotspot for Chinese cuisine?
I actually am surprised it's taken this long. They're really saying a lot of Chinese students have been going to the U of I, and finally the food of their country is catching up with them, and it's become known as a hotspot for authentic Chinese food, flocking there and all of a sudden opening up a number of different Chinese restaurants, but enough to get noticed by the rest of the country.
So what makes Madison, Wisconsin's food culture stand out beyond its famous cheese curds?
Well, it's really funny. I'm really surprised it's taken this long for the media to catch up to Madison, because Madison has been doing their summer local produce market, which has always been spectacular. Lots of stalls, lots of local farmers, lots of high quality product. And now, the restaurants that are building there, the chefs that are going there are taking advantage of all the great things in Wisconsin that aren't cheese curds, right? You have certainly a lot of other products in Wisconsin. So there's that. And then Wisconsin's also famous for the Supper Club, which is still very popular. But now you have some younger chefs putting their own spin on what a Wisconsin Supper Club is. And I think that also is adding to the mix, because those guys as well, cheese curds, not such a big deal on their menu. Fresh food, very big.
Okay, Z, let's talk about Ohio. Columbus, Ohio is gaining attraction now from foodies.
It is. And, you know, they have a great brewery district. Again, they're having some really well-known chefs start to come to their town. And a lot of this is opportunity. And I think, you know, we go back to COVID and how it broke up the restaurant industry. It made a lot of changes. And, you know, one of the things as I'm looking at all these different cities is you're getting some of these younger chefs who work for very good places, you know, all across the country, splitting off and going to small markets where opening a restaurant is much more affordable. And I got to tell you, Columbus, Ohio versus coming to the city of Chicago or New York, you're getting a good deal to open up a very cool restaurant with great cocktails. Again, inspired menus and a lot of good local product.
We're joined by the restaurant coach, Izzy Karish, here on WBBM. Izzy, we mentioned this a little bit when discussing Champaign, Illinois, but how are college towns uniquely positioned to become future food destinations?
Well, you know, the students of today, this younger clientele, are more sophisticated than ever. So it's not like 40 years ago where an Ethiopian restaurant would open in a small town and nobody would go because they had no idea what it was. But now, you know, you can open up that Ethiopian restaurant anywhere. And certainly college towns are more open to having their students go to those restaurants, and not only go to them, flock to them, look forward to them opening, you know, have a whole new experience. So I think that you see these chefs and some of these companies going to that market because the opportunity to grow starts there.
What role do farmers markets, supper clubs, and wine bars play in adding to a city's food scene?
Oh, well, you know, the farmers market, you know, when it's done well, and I tell all my clients, you know, when we buy food at the farmers market for the restaurant, get the name of every vendor and put it on your menu. All of our food is supplied by, you know, this person, all of our honey comes from a local farm right here. We get our local eggs from a farm 5 miles away. So it's really becomes a great marketing piece. And as I said, I think that Madison has always had one of the best farmers markets out there, not only for the general consumer, but a lot of restaurants go there because the products are unique and they're fresh.
Izzy, finally, how important is the city's cocktail or bar scene in helping define its culinary identity?
Well, that is huge. And I know that, you know, in Durham, North Carolina, you know, they have a restaurant with their inspired cocktails. And what they're calling it now is Farm to Sip, which I think is great. And it tells you everything about the cocktails that you're going to try there. And yes, they may be more expensive, but you're getting a unique cocktail, again, made with as many local products as possible. So That part of the, you know, liquor scene, bar scene is becoming very important.
Izzy, great to talk food. Now I'm starving, but that was fun. Thank you. Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works, a.k.a. the restaurant coach, based right here in Chicago. Hey, join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday, and still to come, our Monday Stock Picker.
Lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It is Stock Picker Monday. Joining us with a pair of investment ideas, Tim Grisky, senior portfolio strategist at Ingalls & Snyder, based out of New York. Tim, great to talk today. Okay, let's get into it. What is your first pick of the day for us today?
Good afternoon, Judson. The first one is United Rentals, which rents construction and build other building equipment for primarily large projects, and there is a lot of building going on for large projects. This is a very resilient industry. It's very fragmented. United only has 15% market share. They're the market leader, so they're going to continue to buy in smaller units, smaller companies in this space. The infrastructure bill continues to go along. We're rebuilding roads. United has huge exposure to all those projects.
The ticker on that one is URI. What's our second one today here?
Second one is Constellation Energy. This is a pretty much traditional electric utility, But it has some special features to it. One is they have a growing presence in nuclear power. Nuclear is coming back to the U.S. It's big in Europe. It's going to be much larger here. It's going to be done the right way without problems that we've seen in the past. But Constellation is really a big leader there. They have also a lot of exposure to AI data centers, to clean power generation. This is a great utility, not your traditional one with a high dividend yield, but a lot of growth here.
Yeah, Tim, the ticker on that one is CEG. So what's our price target?
You know, I'm not big on having price targets. The problem with price targets is they always get revised up or down. You know, I look for great companies, and both of these are just great companies with a great future ahead of them.
Tim, we got about a minute left. Give us your thoughts on markets as they hit the highs to kick off the fresh week.
Yeah, this is a very strong market. It's going to continue. Artificial intelligence is going to be a huge growth opportunity for this country. It's going to be akin to the Industrial Revolution. We think this is a huge market. Exposure for portfolio should be tilted towards growth. And we think that's going to, continue to march this market higher.
Tim, thanks so much for your insight there. That's Tim Grisky, Senior Portfolio Strategist, Ingalls & Snyder out of New York. Hey, if you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we will have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Odyssey app.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.